One thing I've been looking at is the worst has already happened in the story and conditioned mind. Like, it didn't seem possible to go through Sadie's death. That was just one of those things during over the years that I lived at the monastery. It just seemed like it just seemed unimaginable. In fact, there'd sometimes be, I've got to figure out a way to leave before Sadie dies because I just, that's just going to be way too hard. And to just have that experience of it, what's hard is the story. Once again.
And, this is probably not completely accurate, but, and sex isn't removed, but the coward dies a thousand deaths, bravery is the only one. Mm-hmm. And that's such a, that's such an example of it.
Yeah.
So to be in that awful experience, mm-hmm. that unbearable experience, over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah. Because there's just no way to know. There's just no way to know mm-hmm. what the experience is.
No.
Will be.
No. But we do know from our experience that when we're present, it is never anything like what is being told to us in conditioned mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there, everything's awful, and you won't be able to stand it. And in our lives, what is true is that we've stood everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there's that experience of loss, and a grief of losing someone that you love. Mm-hmm. And also
the physical presence
of
someone we love, right? Because does anybody feel like
I don't care? exactly. Exactly. And then there's the yes of facing down conditioned mind again, or those kind of horrible stories, and once again saying, no, that's not what's real.
Right, and the significance of what you're pointing at is that the mind can be a horrible thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Life doesn't actually tend to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the mind can be just truly horrific.
Yeah.
And is happy to be truly horrific as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because if a person would entertain those horror stories all the time, they would be there. And of course, we all know people who do.
Mm-hmm.
Just waking and mm-hmm. dreaming at night, just mm-hmm. awful, 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 awful.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yes.
And yet, we can look at them, and we can know from our own experience that if they weren't giving all of their attention to that, they would be living in a world where actually there's nothing wrong. Not that things don't happen that are painful or difficult or, but not horrible.
Horrible. Not something you
not
unbearable. Yeah, you cannot survive. You can, it's just, it's just going to do something horrific to you, like, I don't know what, but,
mm-hmm.
And so to be in that place, and also, I just want to say one thing that, when I was first at the monastery, very new, one Sunday afternoon, this is Sadie indirectly, but Sadie was playing in the front yard. I believe it had something to do with a wading pool and the hot weather. And I heard the monk and her charge just this incredible this laugh of delight. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those turning points when I said, oh, if there's a laugh like that here, I can stay. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I'll always thank her for that, mm-hmm. you know, for just bringing that mm-hmm. moment.
Yes, but life could be like this too.
Yeah.
In fact, it is. It's happening right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a practice of writing a daily love letter, and last night I wrote the love letter to Sadie, and then she wrote one back.
She's good.
It's like,
and she writes poetry, whatever you need.
You know.
Yeah.
Turn up poetry. Yeah. What within the love letter to say was a thank you, like thank you for like showing me how to live, like thank you for being so at home in life, mm-hmm. that helps me be at home in life, mm-hmm. and that you know the Ubuntu in African culture, I've heard it something like I am who I am because we are who we are. And in writing that love letter, I realized how much I am who I am because of Sadie. Mm-hmm. So those daily, like I see in her is that spark, that like, there's that like quickening. So I've had the great good fortune to spend a lot of time sweeping the porches over the last few months. And so that's been a joy because it's been a chance to spend a lot of time with Sadie. Mm-hmm.
Who did relate to that porch.
That was her place. Yeah. And so she's kind of sometimes I mean she was a great helper. The best porch sweeper assistant you could hope for. She'd kind of come around and follow you around a bit, and then, you know, sometimes if you'd go off around a corner, you'd come back, and she'd just be so, like,
happy to see you.
And that happy to see you, that spark, where even when it wasn't easy for her to walk, she would make her way over, and how that would bring that up in me, that every time I would not miss an opportunity to go and bow and touch noses with her. Just mm-hmm. that little, you know, like that. And something about that spark, that's what I mean about that I am who I am because mm-hmm. of Sadie. Like every day, the delight of the first time you would see her in the day, it would be a special greeting. Like that good morning greeting, there'd be an extra spark of excitement.
Yes, because this is the first time.
It's the first time. Who
knew? You knew you'd be here.
Yeah,
and here you are. Yeah,
so I would feel that, mm-hmm. you know, and then the delight of every day, the first time you'd see her in the morning looking through the dining hall window, I would just like, I would feel this like just total delight. I'd just give her a little wave. I just couldn't. You can't suppress a wave like that.
No.
You're like, as long as there's nobody looking, and just all of that.
And it's like the advantage of custody. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You can do all that kind of stuff, and nobody knows. Yeah. Or if they do, they don't care because they're doing it too.
Yeah. So it's just like it. And then the Sadie's, you know, love letter to me was just own that projection.
Yeah.
Simple as that. But just that being so at home in life and being that spark and being that like that unconditional giving of every time you come around the corner.
Yeah. And as you say, no matter how she had hobbled to get there, she was going to come over. And give a greeting.
Exactly.
And in the end, I thought, I projected that a lot of it was that she couldn't see you. You could, might not have been able to smell you. Really wasn't sure who was there. But she was going to come over and say hello anyway.
Right. And
whoever
was,
you are.
Exactly. And I was wanting to, like, show her that, like, if there was that projection, there was a little bit of disorientation, like mm-hmm. you were saying, to show her, like, we're here, we love mm-hmm. you, we're with you. Mm-hmm. Every time. Mm-hmm. Like, every time. Mm-hmm.
And as you say, learning that for ourselves.
Exactly.
Because it is the, if we had that delight every time we came around a corner, what a happy life it would be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly it. So it's just been just so much, and just so grateful. Mm-hmm. And
For all those moments.
For all those moments.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, isn't it, because she has been so wobbly for so long.
Yeah.
But to when they used to get in trouble,
right? Oh.
Because their greetings were so mm-hmm. rambunctious.
Oh my God!
Right, and knocking retreatants over and things like that, and their enthusiasm to say hello and participate.
And the lightning speed. I remember once, Jen was in Zambia and I was walking Sadie, and we were walking on a path out to Meadow. And all of a sudden, she shot off up that very steep bank mm-hmm. and was out of sight in about 3 seconds. And me and Patty were just looking at each other like, did you see that? Oh my gosh! And I remember, I was very concerned that I'd run out of sight. I remember calling Ashwini and saying, Ashwini, I'm out of my depth here. And she said, oh, she does it all the time, it's okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't know she did it all the time at that point. But we walked back, Patty and I walked back slowly, and when we got back, Sadie was sitting on her bed in the courtyard. She had literally run circles around her. She probably, done a massive, loop. So we didn't meet her coming back.
Now, did Patry look worried at all, or?
No. No, well, he knew she did.
She knew
it all the time. It was only me.
Yeah.
It is true. Just sitting there, just chilling, and I just love that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I like these comparisons too, because it's so delightful when they do things like that.
Yeah.
It's not that delightful when people do. Mm-hmm. When somebody goes off and doesn't tell you that they're going, and you have no idea where they are, mm-hmm. if they're going to show up or if they're not going to mm-hmm. show up, because they don't communicate, it's not cute. Mm-hmm. It could be. Mm-hmm. If we were actually present and kind of in the game,
mm-hmm.
but we're not, mm-hmm. right? We're busy here with how it should be and what's supposed to be happening and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just like those, to see the difference in how delighted we are with creature behaviors mm-hmm. that we find super annoying when human beings do them.
Yeah. Yeah.
We wouldn't need to, but we
right.
do. We just hold them and us and one another to such different standards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They and we have one set of standards. Other people need to be held to a higher standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I was just saying, when you were saying that, all the stuff that gets added to life through the human mind, that's just not necessary.
It's just nonsense.
It's just nonsense. So Sadie and I's relationship was built on the roads. We would walk, and mostly when Jen was on, the three of us, Sadie, Pache and I, which I love, because Pache wasn't always up for day walks.
No.
But when Sadie was going, he would do it.
Uh-huh.
And I have all these recordings of like talking to, you know, just, and we would answer all of our, because I would do laps, we would do laps around the property and go everywhere. And they would get, somebody would get behind or post, and then they would come running, and I would take the recorder, but you know, they come, and you'd and a little chain like running around, and I'd, you know, and then after a while, well, Sadie would never let me pass her. And so, like, she wouldn't let me, like, so I used to try to race her down on the platform on Lower Road. And so we'd be running, and I'd be like, I'm with her, I'm with her. And so I was like, what? I was only in third gear. Blow away. I couldn't believe the speed. And even a year ago, she was running down that hill from down the meadow, but she was, her legs were starting to, and so she would get her back legs just kind of, but she was going flying down there. And
because, again, if we do this human-animal thing, she wasn't thinking, you know, I need to be careful. You know, I'm getting up there, and yeah, my legs aren't, so I need to, yeah, none of that. She felt, yeah, like running, she was going to run.
Well, just like
fall down, you fall down.
Exactly. Just like the walking around the porch. Mm-hmm. Oh, I really shouldn't be doing this because, I mean, my legs don't work really well. I mean, you just can't imagine that that is in there. I'm going to go up and touch with that person, mm-hmm, you know.
Yeah.
And my little bear thing, she used to be little spinning around. And she was even doing that, like, fairly not too long ago, and just, like, spinning around in circles. And she's, like, egging Pache on. I'm like, come on, let's play. And Pache is like,
yeah,
you know, like, he didn't really know what to do with it sometimes, but once in a while he'd be like, a bit, and she would do her little circle around, and I don't know. It was just, like, it's just such... Yeah, it brings you to that innocence, to like what we are, where we were when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that just delight. I love when I'm on shuffle and one of those recordings will come on. It's like,
yeah, right. Because they weren't doing anything, right? They didn't need a game to play. They didn't need rules and little league so that they could go out and have fun.
Yeah. Yeah, again, just there was nothing added to,
mm-hmm, just real life. There, yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, so kind of what other people were saying, just that inspiration, I was really inspired by what it seems to bring forth in the community, you know, specifically around this time, mm-hmm, and the amount of like practice that was going on, and the coming together, and like today the sitting with, and
mm-hmm,
just the honoring, the silence, and it was just, it's how I want to be, you know.
Yeah.
That's
how we want to be, and that's how we want to go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so too bad that, mm-hmm, we can't. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be such a different experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, not to get political, but or too political, I guess it used to be until burials became big business.
Mm.
And then, because, I mean, you just, that's what you did. You know, Grandpa died.
Mm.
And you sat with him, and then, mm, he went out in the backyard,
mm,
and then it became something that, mm, somebody else needed to be in charge of, and
commoditized,
and yeah, and it needs to cost this and cost, mm, that and cost that, and apparently engagements and marriages went the same route, mm-hmm, as a matter of fact, because somebody decided there's good money and you need a diamond ring, mm,
yeah.
So,
thank God for those creatures.
Well, and you know, for folks like us, we can still make a lot of those choices. You know,
yeah.
Who was around? You were here when Sylvia died.
Well,
you
know, I wasn't.
You weren't?
No, she never.
No, I guess nobody was.
Yeah.
But that was a.
I was just thinking about that today.
Yeah, it was marvelous. She died at home. We sat with her for 3 days, and then we all we had a pine box,
mm,
and we put her in the pine box, and we drove her to the crematorium because she wanted to be cremated, and we were with her. She made the last journey, mm, and that was it. There's no,
mm,
nobody else was involved. Because, you know, the whole Buddhist thing of not not having people come in and with energy that is disturbing to someone. Because I think, I don't know this, I should Google it, because I think I say this too often for somebody who knows not what they're talking about. But I think there's some research that shows that the last thing that goes when a person dies is their hearing, which is why the whole, especially in Tibetan Buddhism, staying with people and talking with them as they make their transition. And so to have people come in who are unconscious and, you know, just kind of pick up your body and start doing stuff to it, and, you know, it's very disorienting, apparently.
It seems just so important to be a part of something like that. There's the how I want to go, but just to be a part of that, because it really, the honoring of life, just the sacredness of it is what I feel in that description and my experiences here. And there's something, it communicates something to everybody that's a part of that, something that resonates.
Yes.
I can feel that.
Yeah, it takes away some of the fear and the dread.
Yes. Another on the thank you list to say to you, to offer that experience. It's okay.
Yes.
It's all right. She seems
fine.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been looking at that so much lately that, our own experience of what we are, of everything that we care about, that we value, that we love, that we respect, that is meaningful to us. When we're in touch with that, there's a sense that that has always been there, and that it will always be there. It's not actually related to a particular person or a particular, you know, when you come to that place of really being present and centered, and if you've ever had this drop in now, if it hasn't, it will now. You think, I could be anybody. I could be anybody, anytime, this is the experience that every human being has. And then there's the layer added on of, and I'm this person, and I like this, and I do this, and I live here, and these are my... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so to have that sense, I could say that what we loved about Sadie really had nothing to do with that black body, right? She didn't relate to it particularly, except for the fun of being in it. Do you know? But that sense that what that was, what she was, what we loved, still is. Yeah. That has not gone anywhere. That has not died.
No, it's right here.
It's right here.
We have to see the mirror. Mm-hmm. That mirror means that it's always here.
Yes. And then when we go, all that's going are these outer trappings of personality and physical form and all of that.
Which we could be happy to let go of.
Which we're in the process of letting go of now. Yeah,
which is amazing.
Right. Which is the whole point of every type of awareness practice. Every religion, every spirituality. That's the whole deal. Let go of everything that's not that. Because that's eternal. And the only suffering is believing that you're something other than that. So when you're completely identified, what was the story? Ashwini probably knows this. I can't remember where it was, but I'm the person who could run this sword through you. Mm-hmm. Remember the Zen master was there. Everybody else ran away, and the master stayed. And the master was sitting there meditating, and the bad guy came in, and he wasn't getting any respect. You're supposed to be afraid of him. Do you know I could just run this sword through you? And the response was something like, do you know I'm somebody who wouldn't care?
Or I'm the somebody through whom you can run the sword.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. knock yourself out.
And that's just it. And that, and of course, the point of that is it just flummoxes the bad guy, because wait a minute, that's like my whole deal is terrifying people. If you're not terrified, who am I? What am I doing? I want to be where you are, not where I am.
Get an ego like that, huh?
Uh-huh.
That's the better part,
yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking, as Scott was talking about Pache and Sadie, that I told you, it's actually at the New Year's retreat that I was talking to you about, this is when the thing had started to escalate at night, and how I was working with such intense energy and frustration around all of that, and that if it suddenly dropped in, duh, I need a recording that I just press play on when I can hear her waking up again, right? Just a short recording that reminds me. So when I went to get my recorder to make that recording, and I was checking to see which file I had, and I usually use my phone for most of my recordings, so, but I was using my little recorder, and so I went to just find the folder that had room, and the recording that was on it was one from when I did my own personal retreat, put away all my technology and just had that little thing. And I was down in Double O with both of them.
You went?
I was down in Double O with both Pache and Sadie, which never happens. But that was just, I mean, sick, gone, you know, Sequoia and Scott remember. It was just like, you know, all we were doing is eating and sleeping. Mm-hmm. And I had, so I had both dogs in Double O. And it was...
For Justin, Double O is our smallest hermitage. And it was like a large closet.
And I don't know if Pache was around, but Pache was a 100-pound German Shepherd. So, you know, take Sadie and then add another third. So, literally, all we could do was get in the hermitage, just everyone on their bed.
I'm on my bed, you guys. You're on your bed. Yeah. Don't move.
And this recording was the night before he died, which I had no idea he was going to die. Mm-hmm. And I was just saying, this is so delightful. I'm just sitting here breathing in my bed. I can hear him breathing in his bed, and she's sitting there breathing in her bed. Mm-hmm. And that was it. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's the only time I just thought of this. I should have showed you guys this picture today. It's the only time I've ever seen her. That night, after he died, we got back to the hermitage, Double O, and Sadie got in her bed and went like this.
Oh,
I have a picture of it.
Oh my God. So, Justin, for you to know. I don't know if you've heard the story of Pache or if you've ever seen pictures of him, but he was the most beautiful dog I have ever known. So this massive German Shepherd. And we were down doing, we used to do this thing called peace storming, where we would go to some community that was sort of undersourced, and we would just volunteer to do whatever. So we were in South Central Los Angeles. What did they do?
It was Tanya Tull's.
Was it homeless? Did they work with homeless?
Yes,
homeless people, and mostly African American population, and it is a stereotype, I understand, but it's a justified stereotype that many African Americans are very afraid of dogs, and especially big scary dogs, and so here is this giant German Shepherd. And he's just crazed because he's loose in all of this traffic in this neighborhood. And we have no idea, of course, where he came from or, you know, how he got there. But he's running around outside the doors, and people are just freaking out. And so, of course, you know, we went out and got him and brought him in. And they found a special room for us in a hurry. And of course, we didn't know anything about him. And so we brought him in, and what do? Of course, he's got no tag, he's got no anything. And we've driven down from here to Los Angeles to do this project. And so we were doing something, and I turned around and looked at him, and I mean, he's just magnificent. And I looked at the other monk who was there and said, He's gone home. And we just loaded him up. And were you in that vehicle on that trip?
No, I was not.
That poor dog cried. He cried the entire way up California. He cried for
the next 3 years.
Even though he was completely happy, the poor thing was so anxious.
Do you remember Meredith?
Hmm?
Meredith.
Meredith, yeah.
She was a new monk, and she just would sit with him on her. He would lie in her lap for hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just
pet him, yeah. And finally, he got calmed down.
Yeah. Yeah, he was amazing. So that night when he died, Sadie came home and just so sweet.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I miss you, big guy.
Yeah, exactly. I've been thinking so much today about something I heard David White say and something I heard Ellen Watt say. David White talking about the image of growing younger to your death.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually
is kind of like a wrinkle in time, isn't it? You're new.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yes. It's been dropping in, and actually this morning I said to Sadie, well, we are newborns to your death today. And the other thing that I've heard, that which feels like it speaks directly to what you were saying a little while ago, is Alan Watts talking about, I forget what he said, but like we can have death celebrations, like, okay, you're going to die. This is great.
Right. What should we get you?
Yeah, we can. You know, we'll give you morphine, so it'll be okay.
Yeah.
But like, and he's like, you know, I mean, different people could have. Some people might want to have a big cocktail party.
Yeah.
Right. Other people might want just a quiet poetry reading.
Well, in fact, somebody we all know, her mother died recently, had cancer for a long time, and so they all gathered around. It was just like this. They knew exactly how it was going to be and when it was going to be. And they fixed all of her favorite foods because she still felt like eating. And she had all of her favorite foods and her wine and her all of that. Everybody did basically this, sat around together, and then she went.
Wow. See, that's just it. I mean, and what I was experiencing today was, I've never had a baby, never even been there when a baby was born, but I just feel like it feels like something big like that has happened. It's like that kind of a feeling, and it's also, so I was recording this morning, and I was talking about, you know, I talked earlier today about how delightful it was this morning, and I caught this very subtle thing of sort of this, I was in the delight of the presence of the experience, and it felt like what the way conditioning was going to use that was, great, that's done. And what I realized is, in the same, the image that dropped in today was like, wow, whew, the baby's born, okay, we're good, that's behind us. Like, not really.
Yeah, it's just a start.
And it kind of feels like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like that felt wow. I mean, especially, you know, I feel like that this process has been happening in earnest for like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Much longer than that. Really, since Pache died, actually, it feels like it's been starting to happen, but really the last 2 weeks it's been kind of like it's something being birthed, just like, wow, I mean, really, really intense.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I just, there's a sense in the body, I mean, my ribs hurt, in a sense I'm so exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just such a realization of kind of a relief, and also I feel like a wisdom of knowing we're at the start.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Not at the end, and I don't mean that necessarily in a bad way, but just kind of, I guess, in the way that it feels like conditioning is always trying to finish.
Uh-huh.
It's always always trying to get it done. Mm-hmm. And I remember I quote you all the time. I hear myself facilitating quote you all the time, but really early on in practice, I think it may have even been my first retreat in Carmel, where I heard you say when your grandson was young at the time, saying, you know, I'm not saying about my grandson, well, when are we going to be done with this kid? When are we going to finish?
It's going to be over.
And that kind of feels like it. It's always trying to be finished with everything. And the gift of it is that doesn't ever happen. It's always now. Yeah.
And you can feel, certainly, I mean, for all of us, but to a lesser degree, because we've certainly spent more time with Sadie than... that you know how changed you are by this.
Oh my God!
I mean, you don't yet know.
Yeah.
The full magnitude of it, but you certainly know that you are transformed by this experience.
I also know, as you say that, been really looking at the more you give, the more you get, in the sense that I've been watching. Again, I guess it's just that process of the it's. Conditioning strive towards unconscious, like, you know, wow, seeing so much, and then it's kind of like, okay, that's good. Mm-hmm. But I just keep picking up the recorder. Mm-hmm. I just keep picking up the recorder, and I just keep seeing more and more and more and more and more.
You know, you indicated that earlier today, and that's the piece of it that I actually don't know how to articulate it, but I wish to God more people understood it.
Yeah.
That it's in that process of communicating, and it happens with the recorder, that things are revealed.
Yeah.
That things are revealed, but in the sentence there, right? You didn't expect to say that.
Yeah.
And when you said it, you saw something else, and then you said that. And you saw something else.
Yeah.
And that's a process that I don't think happens in any other way.
I don't either.
Yeah. And and of course this is where I say, and that's why there's so much resistance to it.
Yeah.
Because it is accessing a realm. And it's not that realm is not available to people. It certainly is. It's where insight comes from and awareness comes from and that sort of thing. But to have access to it in that conversational way, that it's not a, you know, you're going along and you have an insight. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
It's a, it's like a constant process.
Yeah.
And it seems like, and this is what inspired me to say all of this, is that what you had a sense of was that as long as you kept picking up that recorder and kept talking, those insights were available. It's like you pick up that recorder and it's not, you're not listening. And yes, listening, God knows, listening is incredibly valuable. But when you're speaking, conditioned mind doesn't have access to you. And so you're focused on what it is that you're seeing. You're articulating what it is that you're seeing. And there's no room for anything else to be there. So that wisdom that animates, however we want to talk about that, has direct access to you.
Yeah.
And they can talk to you as long as you're talking.
Yeah.
And it's the darnest thing, isn't it?
It's the darnest thing.
Because there you are talking and you're seeing all of this.
Yeah.
And you're seeing it, and you're talking, and you're seeing it, and you're talking, and you're seeing it, and you're talking.
Yeah.
And, one gets that, becomes suspicious of, how long could this go on? Until I get hungry? Have to go to the bathroom?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Because it can feel like, okay, I have access to you now.
Yeah.
Now I have a lot to tell you.
And
you're here. You're available. You're listening. So listen up.
You're
kind of superstitious.
Yeah. I think it just feels to me like we're definitely closing in on being able to articulate it. Like it just,
That's your assignment, Grasshopper.
Yeah, well, I think the practice of commitments workshop that we did on Saturday, that blew a hole in it. Big time. Really, 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 really huge in terms of the process. that
we're going to have that one again, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, how many people were in that workshop?
50.
Yeah. And you were in it too? You were in it too? You're all in it? Yeah, I wasn't. You know, and then all of us out there listening going, everybody, the best thing that ever happened to me. I was like, we're doing that again. Okay.
That was me and Master Yet on Sunday. I was like, so hesitant to ask. So Jill, were you part of the workshop yesterday? No, you weren't. Okay. Well, it wasn't that good. So I'm still worried about it. Yeah. But I mean, and part of it for me was in that workshop, just in terms of how I connected up with what we're talking about, is listening to person after person. I was listening as a facilitator to person after person to be walked from where I project people are, the place that they're not getting what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. They're not getting that it's a place, mm-hmm. which I completely see. And that's why I feel like probably those of us in the room are really valuable to this process, because I feel like we're bridging that gap. We're coming, at least I feel like I am. I'm coming from, okay, yeah, I'm recording, okay, but I'm not getting the thing that I want. which is a completely different process than what's actually possible. And in the workshop, I think what we saw was person after person get facilitated across that bridge. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that I think is going to be so mm-hmm. powerful. So, I mean, seriously.
Yeah, because that place that people don't get, that's big.
It's big.
That's the big stumbling block. Yeah. And again, you know, you've all heard me talk about this. You know, it's not what it's how.
Yes.
Right? And just, you know,
yeah.
God, I know He's saying something. And yeah. God, I know it's important. What in the world does that mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just not able to see it. Just
flat out.
Yeah, just flat out cannot see it until all of a sudden you see it. And so to have somebody, I mean, I'm talking about my teacher, you know, he never gave. And he was not, we didn't have the kind of relationship where I could say, could you give an example? Right? And so to just say it, you know, and then just say it. It's like, What does that mean?
And
so to be walked through
exactly
that.
Because I think that's a rare quality, to stick around through that.
I watched dozens of people get to that same point. Go, yeah, I don't get this.
Yeah,
there's gotta be a better way than this.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And so to connect it up with Sadie and what I was saying earlier in the archway, to be given a gift, to be able to make that movement, mm-hmm. is like beyond words.
Oh, yeah. So it's like, you know, if there's an opportunity to return the favor, you'll have life as a dog. she can be the human and return that gift.
Well, I said, actually, in one of my recordings, I was saying what a humongous gift that has been to me.
Mm.
And that what I got was, one of the things that really helped me get out of a self-hating thing around that was, it's not that Sadie, the entity, is giving something to Jen, the entity. Because then it feels like, I don't know, but it just felt like life is assisting life to wake up. Mm-hmm. And what I felt like in that was, so at any point, if this life is needed for that, it's yours.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
See, from the moment I found you, mm-hmm. I was yours.
Body
and soul.
Yeah.
Do with me as you will, but give me ever greater desire for your feet.
For your feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just so incredibly grateful for all of it.
Rebecca and Ashwini.
The thing that you were just talking about with the recording and how it just keeps going and over, you know, what was dropping in as you were saying that was a quote from Meister Eckhart that has kind of always puzzled me a little bit, but
It was that the greatest enemy of God is time. And what I saw, and the reason I think that was dropping in as you were saying that, is that what happens with my experience of what you were describing is that it blows away, just completely obliterates this notion of, like, I don't know, call and response or this and that, and I do this and then later in the moment you do that. It's like time is unfolding, or actually, no, it's more like timelessness. In that experience, because I thought to myself, I was thinking, about a question I had or a problem I was kind of thinking about, and then it would just drop in. Well, I just need to start recording, because I would just know that there is an unfolding that happens in that process that directly. Answers isn't even the right thing.
Well, see, I think what you're articulating, if you can tell me, is that when you say, so there's a problem that you're grappling with, and you say, I just need to start recording. What you've done in that moment is accept. Mm-hmm. You've accepted the situation. Mm-hmm. As long as it stays in conditioned mind, and it's that conversation in conditioned mind, there's really no acceptance of it.
Yeah.
It the conversation in conditioned mind is resisting to it, uh-huh. is resisting it.
Yeah.
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 And so when you say, I need to record, you have now accepted that these are the circumstances. Now you are open to the clarity
uh-huh.
that is going to come. So you've already let go.
Yeah.
You're just now going to have the pleasure of recognizing a different relationship with whatever that was.
Yeah. And in that, what was just dropping in is that in that moment of acceptance, it is then that now I've got access to you.
Yes.
And it just unfolds.
Yes. And there's this, and there's mm-hmm. this, and this, and you can see how this, and
mm-hmm.
right, and that, and that, and that. And the whole thing gets explained to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've said yes to... And a willingness to be present to what is.
Yeah, and it truly is. It truly is. I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth until it's out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, exactly.
And that is the best part.
It is absolutely the best part. It's why we facilitate.
Yeah, yeah.
Because maybe you hear it, maybe you don't.
Plus the anxiety on the recorder, though. Like, because you know what I mean? Like I've had times in coaching calls where, like, I could really feel the terror of, I don't know what I'm going to say. I don't know what's going to be here. So it's a little less intimidating with the recorder. So I don't know, maybe I enjoy it more or something because it's just not scary. It's just a pure delight. I'm aiming toward having that exact level of delight with another person, too. It's facilitating.
Well, I hope so, because that's why you're doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we don't need a lecture on this, although I'll
please
deliver a mini one, okay?
Because
what a person doesn't need in a coach or a facilitator is somebody who's terrified.
Because
they're terrified, and that's why they're seeking support, so hopefully from somebody who isn't. The ship is going down. Oh, God! That's not what the captain, you want the captain to say. If you use that process as a way of letting go of that fear, a way of just stepping into the trust that whatever needs to happen will happen, and whatever needs to be heard will be said, then that's the benefit to you,
mm-hmm.
and it'll be the benefit to the other person as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because in that kind of environment, really all we're attempting to be for the other person is present.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So to be there and to, in fact, to be willing to model, okay, let's give it a second, because I know something is going to come through here, but that's not for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in that willingness to be present like that, the time lag between there's nothing there and what needs to be said is there to be said shortens and shortens and shortens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's good to practice with the recorder, but also to go into it in that same, you know, it's kind of a prayerful attitude of, okay, the channel is open. I, the channel is open. Let's let it be there.
And it will be.
It always is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
So far so good.
It's so far so good. Yeah. And so to just consciously let go of the fear and step into that trust, because then you're going to enjoy it so much more. Because what you've identified is the very process. The more you're in that attitude of mind, the more it's going to come through.
Bigger, I guess.
More open. Big channel.
So many things. The first thing is the what to me the deepening of my recording practice, where it's been a commitment to record all the time, to record everything. And what I realized that is reflective of what we've been just looking at is there's an it's sort of like the landscape of interiority is what gets it.
That's what I thought.
But that's my experience.
Would you say a little about that?
Sure.
Okay.
So if the conditioned mind experience is a surface of life experience,
uh-huh.
It's not a depth experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get to live on the surface, interacting with things on the surface,
mm-hmm.
almost non-participatory.
Mm-hmm.
But that
very very much an observer.
Yeah, sort of like I know what a tree is, but if I start to record about a tree, the tree and I are now in an experience of treeness,
mm-hmm.
that gives me a sense of the essence of the tree and therefore the intelligence that animates me and the tree,
mm-hmm.
through the exploration of it in articulation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just that wisdom that is expressing itself deepens. Right, my ability, it's not even access, it's such a totality of participation that the only way I get to know the intelligence that animates is to have that.
Is to participate with
in
it.
The interior, it's, mm-hmm. it's a depth experience.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing like it because there isn't anything like it. I mean, prayer is one thing and all of those things, but this is sort of like the at least for me, the mechanics of an intimacy of the intelligence,
mm-hmm.
that I get to explore because my attention is on it and I'm articulating it. It doesn't work if I'm sitting and thinking about something.
Right.
Not at all, because it's not a thought process.
That's right.
Right? And I think is what it does, is it short circuits that process of knowing into the mystery of not knowing, which is an interior experience.
Mm-hmm.
I get to know what can never be known in a moment of knowing through revelation in interaction.
Because there is no knower.
That's right. There is no knower. There is a, yes, yes. Anyway, it's just for me, it's like I don't know this, but I'm going to say, I think we all read this book called Wind at the Door.
Did people read Wind at the Door?
It's a sequel
to Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah.
And they talk about how at the base level of everybody is a network of song, of harmony that's pervading everything and everybody. Right, this is that if you listen to it, everything is interconnected, talking to everything else at that level. And it's almost as if you get down to the level of that,
that the interiority of everything. It's an access to a realm that is impossible to explore through thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to explore it in a different way. Anyway, that was...
Well, and the interesting thing is, you know, we don't often think about speech as separate from thought.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what the experience is. The speaking does not require thought at all, and the understanding does not require thought.
Yes, it's almost as if intelligence speaks.
Yes,
which is not a quality of the mind.
Yes, yes. Well, and the direct experience of Zen.
Yes.
So there's that, and we all know that in something as simple as insight. You know, you have an insight, and then if you were to try to describe it to somebody, you know, get a cup of tea. It'll take a while, and see, you're still not going to, at the end of it, we won't know what we're talking about,
yeah.
Right? Because you simply cannot bring it into that surface realm and without completely losing the whole thing.
Yeah, and to me it feels like, just like we say in practice all the time, a way to know that is a different way of knowing.
Yes.
And
yet it is the way we know everything.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Or at least, yes, in that sense that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's related to the two other things I was looking at. It's been an intense week in many ways, in terms of things happening in lives. And for me, it's a great privilege to witness
so many events and so many lives.
So many events and so many lives.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way that process of recording provides an interior experience, if I'm at the identity level of that, which is a possibility, I'm not conscious of being in the mental level of it when I'm in the interaction, but the story can be the life I lead is not one of belonging to, my story is not so turbulent or interesting or with that much love or that much intimacy or that much, you know, there's a way in which facilitation removes the person from the experience and therefore can feel impersonal. But I've had such a sense of being so much a part of everyone's life. In the role, in a very small role that I play, and somehow it has given me a sense of belonging that I've never had. Because it's not a personal sense of belonging. I don't have to share the day-by-day relationship that this person had with the person they lost, or the thing that they lost, or whatever else. But in some stupendous way, I'm part of the story. And it's the shift from that same surface way of calibrating, okay, this person is related to this person in this way, and the stories go in this way, and so the role that you play is this role, or whatever it is. But that interior experience of, I'm part of everybody's story. And not just at a universal level or an impersonal level, but a tremendously participatory level.
Well,
it doesn't matter how.
Yes. Well, and it's back to when you were talking about that deep level. First of all, the first thing you were describing gives me meaning to service.
Yeah.
Right? It's so service that, okay, there's that person and they're related to that person and they have that kind of relationship and their story is this and that. I mean, it's like reading about it. Or if they're characters in a movie or a television show. That other thing that you were describing is when with Dogen or with Kegyuri Roshi, when they're talking about being time, mm-hmm. and how everything it at that, you know, it all collapses in less than a moment, and is there interpenetrating and intermingling and intermixing, and it's everything as it is, but it's all intermingling in harmony and peace, and then it comes back into being, and it's almost like, okay, now everybody, here we are in a new moment, yeah. right? And that, to me, that second part that you were describing is that experience.
Yeah, because the mental surface level can keep you isolated. Oh. In
it's a story of isolation.
It's a story of isolation, and because of that story, it removes the ability to participate and belong on dimensions that cannot be imagined.
Yes.
Because it's all limited.
Yes.
Right? You are my family member, and I should feel grief when you die.
Well, and it's all subject-object.
Right. Well, and I don't. And then I get crucified because I'm not a loving person. Mm-hmm. Right? Whereas that other way of feeling grief and of projecting love, it gets altered into, well, you don't have that kind of irreparable sense of loss that person was just experiencing. Well, how do I know that?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Except that I'm having to right?
Yeah.
And so to...
Oh, but we can be fooled by that for so long.
I mean, live in that place of what we were looking at in the kickoff, right? Mm-hmm. That if I can look at the world as the kettle is singing for me, mm-hmm. and the pots and pans are waiting for me to interact with,
yes, they finally.
Then there is no way to be alone in anything, uh-huh. because I am part of that experience somehow. Mm-hmm. And if I can only stay for that somehow, the interiority of life is just, it's so rich.
Well, it takes me to my current, well, it's been a favorite for a long time, being the thingness of everything that you see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you're describing, right? It's on the surface, I'm not a pot or a pan. I'm not a kettle. I'm not that person. I'm not that. Thing. I'm not those, I'm not them, I'm not any of that. But the thingness of everything I see, yeah, that I am.
Well, and the last thing I was aware of is to be present is to be present to the experience I'm having.
Yeah.
And not I'm having.
Of this moment.
Of this moment. And it's incredibly rich if I'm allowed to have it.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be the experience I should be having, which is where I think we live most of the time, and which is why the recording, that interiority, is so important, because it allows me to be in the interior experience whatever is going on.
Yes.
I'm not stuck and I don't belong and I'm not feeling this way and I hate this and my knees hurt and all of the surface experience. But the depth of how perfect.
Yes, and it's so funny, because if you just talk to people, most people would say your knees hurting is much more real than that you are identifying with the thingness of everything you see.
Yes.
That the kettle is singing to you. Knees hurting, kettle singing to you. Okay, real nutsy. And yet, to have the experience is, as you say, that constant, and this is going on, and that's going on, and I'm feeling this, I'm thinking that, and that, whatever it is to maintain that superficial, that surface level where ego is the only thing calling the shots.
Well, and the thing that I watch about that, right, Cherry, is that, you know, so let's just say I identify with a person who's very objective.
Let's say.
Let's just say. And so I don't experience emotion, not because I don't experience emotion. It's because I identify with being objective. And an entire realm of experience that I'm having is shut out.
Yes.
Because my only ability to be is limited to my experience of the surfaceness of things.
Yeah.
That's it. And once I...
It's why we are constantly on about dropping the story, mm-hmm. getting out of the conversation in your head.
Well, that's having the courage to explore interiority with a quarter or mm-hmm. some way, because if you want your life to be rich, then you have to do what it takes.
Right,
to be part of richness,
that's
which
right.
is to be more
right.
dimensions than your mental one. You know, it's
yeah.
as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. As simple as that. In quotes.
Yeah.
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 All right. Well, we thought we were going to have a short group for everybody's
yeah.
exhaustion, but it didn't happen quite that way. So, thank you, Joe. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.